de Moby Natural Blues. Here we are, Natalie. I've just realised I've left an answer phone message with Arthur McKenzie on his landline without actually realising, you know, the fact it was Ian Lennox. Fortunately, they know each other, so when Arthur actually picks up the message and says he might sort of know what's going on. He may not. He might just think, left Chooks lost it again. The weather here on Siren 107.3 FM, highs of 7 degrees centigrade, lows of 6 degrees centigrade. It's going to be dry and bright with a few clouds around there, but generally a sunshiny Thursday for the 1st of December, which is great news as we move up to Newcastle for the exciting world of Ian Lennox. We've already been anticipating over the joys of The Net, the latest Ian Lennox opus, and we say those magical words. Ian Lennox, are you there?
I am.
Excellent.
This is not Arthur McKenzie.
No, I know. I dialed up a number, got a voicemail, and then when you were saying that's not my landline at all, I realised I'd actually written the completely wrong person's contact details down there. Never mind. You know, that's the important thing. I think it all boils down to the fact there was a time where Ian would never actually receive incoming calls from unacknowledged numbers, and that always created challenges. So in the early days, Ian actually had to phone us. So we thought, that's dreadful. You know, he's actually having to pay to promote his own stuff. It's ridiculous. You know, I mean, it's just all sorts of things there. Ian, top writer, you moved into that from the 60s man through the Brothers, which I still think stands out as an outstanding anti-war message for World War One and a whole heap of other factors, etc. But before then, of course, you were one of Tyne Tees Television's finest. Let's set the scene, because we have Natasha Turney and Natalie Tuck in the studio. One of those is a level one journalism student, the other one is a level three journalism student. And actually, Natalie, share with Ian what your dissertation topic is, because given the subject matter of The Net, I think this could be a fascinating one. I welcome his input. What are you studying, Natalie?
I am studying propaganda in the press prior to the invasion of Iraq in 2003.
All right.
Yes.
Yes. I know nothing about that.
That's great. There you go.
I mean, I should establish that, but I can only get better after that. Exactly.
Ian, share with us your career path, how you shifted from Tyne Tees and all sorts of other production-based things to becoming the ace author we've come to know and appreciate today.
Well, unlike Natalie, I didn't go to college. In my day, which was in the 60s, you took your A-levels, and then you went. The trend was you went into journalism, so you learned on the job, really. And, I remember vividly, I mean, I lived in a sort of middle-class area in Gloucester, and suddenly I was, after a week at the Conigal office in Thompson House, and as it was then in Newcastle, I was sent out to North Shields. I remember vividly covering a court case. After a week being there, I was sent to cover a court case, no shoulder or anything, and there was this chap up on a burglary charge. I remember I was so naive and innocent, I sort of looked at him and thought, this is what a criminal looks like. I was literally that sort of naive.
I mean, Natasha, have you actually done your court reporting as yet?
I haven't written it up yet.
But you've actually been in court.
But I've been in court several times. I'm a regular now.
Were you tempted to say,
Not.
So that's why. Yeah, she just wanted to make that quite clear, basically.
I'm a journalist, I hope, Natasha.
Exactly. You ever use that line, is that what a criminal looks like? Natalie, is that what a criminal looks like then?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
I don't think there's a particular look of a criminal.
Oh, I don't know.
I think there is.
Yeah. And Lord knows, Natalie, you've got your finger on the pulse there.
Yeah.
Certain parts of the country.
Well, anyway, Natalie, I went on to meet, an over career sort of variety of characters, from cabinet ministers to convicted killers. And and one thing journalism does give to you is a fantastic experience of life, in that you meet such a cross section of people in so many different circumstances that, in my particular case, it's an absolute total gift as a writer, because you get all this material. And, you know, there's so many people in other jobs I've met, so comparatively so few people, that it gives you a different perspective. And, as I say, if you want to be a writer, I didn't plan it like this, it just happened, but it was a wonderful experience, and I still use copiously experiences from life when I'm writing.
Always the best way.
Yes.
So it's time for the random number game, where we go into the sight reading scenario, and I have to put a little caveat out here, because some of the text that actually is featured in The Net does feature industrial language. I would obviously change the necessary things to obviously adjust that, because clearly sensitive audiences, etc. I don't want to be effing and jeffing at 9 o'clock in the morning.
No,
people
you don't,
be concerned on that sort of basis. However, would you like to give me a number between 1 and 289, Arthur? Not Arthur, Ian. Ian Lennox, which number would you wish me to go for? 84.
Yeah.
Oh,
84,
okay.
I wish I'd
have
spoken from you.
Well, you know, in both cases, nothing had happened. In the beginning, Soulsby rang him about once a month. Then one day, he called to say he would be away for a while. He didn't say how long, and Bennett didn't ask. Bennett had begun to pick up stories himself, merely by ringing the names on Soulsby's list. Some of them were remarkably helpful at the mention of his name. Bennett wondered, but never asked, what Soulsby had on them. His career began to prosper. Corrigan became his biggest supporter, riding on his success. Bennett didn't care. He knew that that was the way the game was played. He was promoted to chief sports reporter with the power to select any game he wanted to cover. He moved from the semi in Didsbury to a large detached house in Altrincham. He began to get calls from a Mr. Franklin, one of Soulsby's associates. Franklin occasionally gave him some football gossip, but it was obvious he had no real interest in the subject. He also seemed less concerned with the little titbits that Bennett picked up from his travels abroad. Bennett assumed that his work was becoming obsolete. Then, one weekend, Franklin rang to say he wanted to meet Bennett in Albert Square in Manchester. He was to travel in by bus. Franklin didn't say why. Bennett asked how he would recognise Franklin, as they never met. Franklin had given a short laugh. Don't worry, I'll be wearing a pink carnation and I'll be standing in the centre of the square. Bennett got the impression he was making some sort of in-joke. He wanted to ask some questions, but Franklin just said, three then, and hung up. As it happened, Franklin wasn't wearing a pink carnation and he wasn't standing in the middle of the square. He waved to Bennett and walked slowly from behind the statue of Gladstone. He was a small man with wide, sad eyes. He smiled and gestured for them to sit on one of the long wooden seats. Within minutes, they were joined by three men and a woman. Franklin smiled. My A-team. Did I do that justice, Ian?
Yes. It's a slightly sort of... it wouldn't be an episode of Chose, because it's not part of the main structure of the book. But
it's interesting.
It's a bit about Bennett's corrupted journalists.
Well, you see, the thing about Bennett is, unfortunately, he meets a very sticky end. He thinks he's had... Without giving too much away, because I originally, when I was reading through this, I thought, it's the story of Bennett. It's lost love. It's the person he actually met. It's the sort of... The geek gets the girl. The girl falls in love with Bennett.
Yeah.
He goes off to all sorts of things. He follows his career. He goes off to Prague. He comes back from Prague. Bang. Slap bang. Out of Heathrow, he's killed. You know, it's not giving too much away, but suddenly he's gone in the middle of the book. And actually, it's more a text of, as we said, Maurice Oakeslie, interesting character in his own way, particularly with his pet Geordie accent that he comes from, because his father used to run a brothel in Newcastle, as you do every so often. That's true. You know, if you're in Newcastle, he's a personage as the executive sports editor from the Evening Chronicle in Newcastle, John Gibson. A fascinating thriller because it is realistic, as all football fans will recognise, and by the honorary vice president of Newcastle United, Malcolm Dix, as a story that keeps you guessing to the end because Lennox has a great knowledge of football. Is it based on any particular football chairman in particular?
Indeed not. In fact, it was one of the most difficult things I had to do because... I was so much aware of the litigious prospects of anything like that, that I like to write the character in the Northeast, because that's the area I know, and I had to take him out of there, because I knew perfectly well what would happen. Everyone was saying, oh, it's so-and-so. So I took him off down to London, and I was so much constrained by the fear that I was subconsciously going to identify one of the people I knew, it didn't help in the development of the writing of the character.
Let's be honest, Ian, you can't turn around and say to Sir John Hall, but you set up the Metro Centre. Isn't that just like a brothel? No, it's not going to work.
I tell you now, anybody who knows Sir John Hall as I do, and the others you're talking about, I did stuff with George Reynolds as well.
Ah, bless him. Now, you see, if you'd actually gone, Natasha, to George Reynolds in the time when he was in charge at Darlington Football Club, you know, he once referred to me as a quote-unquote knobhead, did George Reynolds?
It was interesting. Very kind of him.
Actually, no, he referred to himself as that. He referred to himself as that. Why? Because we actually kept him waiting on the line for a telephonic link for more than 20 seconds. You know?
That is shocking.
He was listening to classical music. He was not yet concerned with that. Anyway, that's never. Anyway, I won't share any more.
Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that, if you knew them, there's absolutely nothing small about them at all. There's absolutely nothing about them.
Very good.
I knew them both. I got to know them both very well.
Yeah.
There's a story I could tell you about John Hall, how good he was to me, is that when I was at Tainty's producing stuff, I'd got a boxer called Glenn McCrory, world champion boxer, and one of my best friends at Tainty's called Bob Whittaker, who's a producer director, and they were doing this little series where they went around meeting people on Tyneside in various little circumstances, and I persuaded John Hall had agreed. He had such a good sense of humour. This is at his pomp when he was the man of the North East. Mm. To stand outside the Metro Haymarket station selling newspapers, dressed up in a sort of Mac and things, with a billboard saying Newcastle chairman, a new job shock.
Nice. Like
and,
it, that.
And we're going to film him doing that. And they called it off because his personal assistant rang me and said he couldn't come, and she couldn't say why. And I found out later it was because he was trying to sign a very, very big footballer from another club. Hmm. And he was expecting a phone call.
For the benefit of Natasha, when Ian's referring to a very big footballer, he's not talking about somebody who's overweight. He's actually sort of a well-known sort of person at the time, really. Because a common mistake, I know this, when we were covering sports journalism, you were not necessarily the number one football fan, were you? Or are you?
I watch it socially.
Socially, right. A particular team that you follow?
Most of my friends are fans of Manchester United, so if there's a game on of that, we'll probably be watching
Crystal
it.
Crystal Palace did very well last night, didn't they? Anyway, that's a different message. There's a little line there. Obviously, those of us who are followers of the true Manchester City side of things are well aware that we're heading to... In fact, we are now, Ian, the only side that can actually win 4 trophies this season still. Still quad hunters, so that's very good. Sorry, I'm digressing once again, Ian. You're back to positive things from that. Bottom line is there's a lot of insightful stuff that works through with that. Natalie, you've had a quick flick through the text, etc. Questions from yourself?
Yes, Ian, how have you incorporated spies into this book, and where did you get the idea to bring in spies?
I can't remember. this is the third book I've written, and I rewrote it 10 times. And Alex knows me a little. It's not my personality or anything like that at all, really. But I just wouldn't give up, and I got the structure wrong, basically, at the start. Changed it. Wrote another book, The Brothers, in the meantime. Then went back to it, and so this convoluted path, I eventually sort of got out a version that was acceptable to me. But I don't know. I just can't remember. I think it started with the idea. I wanted to write a book about a corrupt chairman, because I knew a fair bit about football. I'd start to read a lot about allegations.
Ian, are there really corrupt chairmen in football? I can't believe that, do you know?
I couldn't possibly say.
You'd be saying that agents actually take cuts and slices off transfer fees next. You know, it's astonishing.
There are many, many people in football who are totally honest and very decent people.
I mean, there's a couple of interesting points you make with respect to football, insofar as there's one player in the book, it's a fictional character, obviously, and the sort of expose comes out that he's sold to a club for effectively $4 million, but actually he's been sold for $6 million, but the other $2 million has actually been ferried off to various sources, such as agents, etc. Tended to have a kind of the ring of authenticity, presumably without mentioning any names. That's something which, in a sense, you would have evidence from your journalistic reporting days that we are in that business, though effectively when you start talking about, well, let's say Carlos Tevez, for instance, how much of the money would actually go to the club, how much would go to him, how much would go to Kia Jirapshian, his agent, those kind of deals, which you could say they're not necessarily illegal, but they're maybe just a little bit dubious, they aren't actually take place on a regular basis.
But the period I'm writing about was the 90s, so it was.
We're talking about six and 7 million as opposed to 20 and 30 million.
Well, yes, there are investigative writers who have gone into various deals.
Yeah.
And basically what happened in the 90s was that money came into football and big time when Sky started to pay a lot to put it out. And basically what happened was that agents came in and started to make money out of it.
And in the book itself, we obviously have the denouement. I'm not giving anything away here, I'm not, but it takes place in Prague. And I was thinking initially, when Joey gets dressed up as a clown, were you influenced by Roger Moore's incarnation in Octopussy as a clown? Just thought, was that something which in the back of the mind you thought, I see Roger Moore doing this as opposed to Daniel Craig taking on board the role of Joey?
No, never. I'm not sure I've ever seen Octopussy.
Well, I think you should check it out, because you'll find that possibly there's a significant line there, particularly when the Roger Moore incarnation of Bond, dressed as a clown, actually has to defuse a nuclear bomb from going off and setting off another world war. It's an important part, Arthur.
I've seen that, yes. It's in circus, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Stephen Burke.
No. The idea of the clown came from a book I never published called The 70s Man, which was written 30 years ago. So it was before Octopussy.
That's all right.
It hasn't been published, so I use it in this book.
The combination between football and the spy game, it does work. I think from what I actually say in, I mean, it will be the book of the month for our sister station Southside Broadcasting in January. I think we've already confirmed
that.
But without giving too, it's enjoyable. It's a good stuff. I'm tempted, Ian, to actually pass the text on to Natalie, and hopefully she'll actually have a little perusal through it, so she's actually sorted through with the whole thing. She managed to wait out through the first 10 pages of Shane Rimmer's autobiography last week, so I don't know. It's 286 odd pages here, Natalie. I don't know. Or Natasha, are you a speed reader in between your sort of catering services and such like?
It really depends on the book.
If
it's an interesting book, which this sounds interesting, then I think I'd give it a shot.
Ian, shall we actually give Natasha a little test? Because I've obviously given it my sort of view, and I think it's great. I think it's thumbs up from that point. A couple of areas I might possibly thought didn't quite kind of connect together, and there is, as I say, I think we certainly go very much into spying and cinematic areas and a range of other bits and pieces. Shall we actually sort of find out what Natasha actually thinks about the system, etc., and then maybe we can sort of address it from the female perspective, so we get all sort of gender issues covered here.
Yeah, I mean, one of my fears, of course, is that people who don't like football will just be turned off by the book. But it isn't.
It's not
really
just
about
football. It's about spying as well. I mean, I could see spooks coming.
It's about people's lives and about ambitions and failures.
Brothel owners in Newcastle, all sorts of things.
Morris Oakley is quite an interesting guy, because he's superficially he's hyper successful. Really, he's terrifically successful. But as a man, he's a failure completely.
This is true, but then again, so was his father. But we won't go there in all sorts of ways. In fact, you can actually relate all sorts of things there. And curious enough, it's Morris and Joey, presumably not named after Jerry Barton, the erudite footballer who's moved on to Queen's Park Rangers these days, etc. But Joey Smith, is it Joey Smith? Smith, etc., who's sort of the lead characters who do actually survive and thrive through a whole system. We'll get both Natalie and Natasha to actually have a little look through it. Which brings us around neatly to the last two questions. So, Natalie, it's your turn. Would you like to ask Ian both those questions in whichever order you wish, basically?
Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Oh, yes. I've had my breakfast, and so I'm all right.
Nice.
I've enjoyed it.
We haven't asked for Ian's recipe, because he had a recipe all prepared, because it was a sort of standby in case Aaron Craig actually hadn't come up with the whole thing. Does that mean you haven't quite got the recipe to hand?
Well, I can give you one, but I did warn you that cooking in my house is never finished until the fire alarm goes off.
Sounds like a typical student's house. I think that's perfectly okay.
It could well be that...
We'll hold on that. We'll hold on that for hopefully a positive answer to the second question. Natalie?
Yes. Can we look forward to connecting with you in the near future?
To what, sorry?
Connecting with you.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, anytime you like.
She was worried for a time therein. She thought, oh no, he's going to turn me down and all the blame will fall on my shoulders for not saying that. Now, Ian Lennox will return in the very near future, possibly maybe a week's time, maybe a fortnight's time. Depends on when the book's actually read and sorted through from that point of view. Ian Lennox will be back. Don't forget, The 60s Man is still available, The Brother's still available, and The Net is still available. And we'll also be talking about his next novel, which is all focusing on cricket in the near future.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Working through. So it's all great stuff there. Ian, we salute you.
The Midweek Drive and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. two radio shows you can enjoy live, online and around the world from sirenonline.co.uk.